This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Welcome to Teacher Talk Radio. Today you're here with your hosts, Krupa and Nazia. And tonight we'll be discussing what effective quality school governance means. Join us, and we look forward to hearing your views too.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome everyone. Hope you're all doing good. We are happy to be back and presenting. We've had a bit of a break and it was mainly because of me, because I was fasting during Ramadan and our show was airing at the time that we broke our fast. But we're back now, and Krupa, how are you?
I'm really well. I'm really excited to be back. How was Ramadan for you?
It was really good, actually. Really, really good. And I always leave Ramadan feeling like I could do more. And I think a lot of people do. But it was really good. Yeah, thanks for asking.
Happy Eid.
Thank you for that. It's been a busy summer term. I think every single practitioner I've spoken to so far, they've already said the busyness of summer term has already started. And I feel like perseverance is the word of the day for me as well. I'm excited about today's show, and we have our dear guest and friend on our show today, Julia Skinner. So let's get started. We have an advert coming up, and then we'll move into our show and interview with Julia.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more, and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Hello, Julia, and welcome to have you on our show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. It's lovely to be here. It's Friday, so what's not to like?
Lovely, yeah, exactly. So the first question for you is about your journey as an educational practitioner. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you've been doing over the years?
I didn't qualify until I was 30 for various reasons. My training was as a middle school practitioner, which obviously was 8 to 12 or 8 to 13. But it in theory meant that I could go either way, primary or secondary. My first job was actually as a secondary maths remedial teacher. I'm that old that we had remedial teachers. But I've always had a passion for special needs, which, you know, as I say, it was remedial in those days. I had the opportunity of being a peripatetic, which means you spend a lot of time in the car going around to schools. But again, special needs. And that was great fun down in Somerset. And then I got another full-time established post as a head of department in a secondary school, where we, at the time when we were just moving from remedial to special educational needs. And that was great fun. Over time, I moved to Bristol, met my wonderful husband, and we got married, my third husband, that's it, three times lucky, and had a breakdown. I had two years out, and never really thought I would go back. But a friend saw a part-time Senko role in a primary school, and I dismissed it. I said, oh, don't be silly, you know, I couldn't possibly do that. Well, she badgered, and I went for the interview, and I got the job. And again, I loved it, and very much in a primary setting was just what I needed. And then I had moved to a full-time post to the Innes, to the centre of Bristol. And from there, I then got a deputy headship, did a term, old terms, summer term. My head teacher didn't come back from his summer holidays. I'd scared him that much, having me for a term. And I was then made acting head, and that was made substantive. So within 5 years, I'd gone from a part-time post to headship. And I'm still wondering how on earth that happened. And over the course of my time, I've been head of three different schools, although one you would probably say was the same one, but we then added another school. So I was a junior head in two schools, and then my final post was I was made the head of a primary school when we amalgamated with our infants. And that was just so glorious. I didn't realise how wonderful nursery and infants were until I had my own. And I retired after two very successful years of the amalgamation, and wondered what I was going to do next. And my next stage, as far as education was concerned, was to go into governance.
Wow, I'm inspired, Julia. There is just so much there. And of course, 5 years, how did you manage to learn the ropes really quickly, but also think about building your own confidence in learning about the growth of the school? And, you know, I'm guessing at some point you probably didn't have a deputy because you were the deputy that became the head, and that whole process. So I'm assuming there was a whole mix of emotions and lots of skills to learn very, very quickly.
Yes, and I think it showed me that, and actually, it right at the beginning of my headship and at the end, or after 6 months or so of retiring, I realised that actually I'm passionate about education. I wasn't so fussed about the teaching for myself. And when I got to the end of the headship, when I retired from headship, to say I wasn't fussed with headship wasn't right, but I wasn't really into the mechanics of it, but I still had that passion for education. And I think I, because of that, I was a learner all the time. I felt I was able to say, I'm really sorry, I'm new. I love that, you know, oh, sorry, I'm new. I just asked questions. I was very lucky when I first became a head to have somebody in the local authority who was nothing to do with education per se. He worked in buildings, but he was my go-to person. I could phone Bill if I needed to know who to contact, or I had a particular problem, he would know, you know, would signpost me. And I was very lucky that I was able to build that support network. As far as the deputy's concerned, you're right. I didn't have one to start with. I had three very intimidating senior teachers who were amazing, but absolutely frightened me to death. And we went through the process of trying to appoint a deputy twice. And in the end, on the third time, two of my senior teachers decided to apply. When they saw the quality of what was coming through the door, they decided to apply. And one was, I was very close to. The other was one of these scary people. And we appointed the scary person because the scary person was what the school needed. It was what I needed. And she is one of my dearest friends. She still scares me sometimes. And she was the only deputy in all my schools I ever had. I was spoilt. And from then on, I never had a deputy. I always had a senior leadership team. Because, you know, she was, they broke the mold when they built her. But I do enjoy the relationships, I think. I think now, you know, now that I'm 72, I can look back and think, right, well, so how did that happen? I was constantly thinking, well, they're going to find me out. They're going to find out that, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm making it up as I go along. But I think if I, you know, from your question, I think it was all about relationships. Relationships with the children, relationships with the staff. And one of my mantras is to find the potential and release it. And I believe passionately in that. And whether that's in a little button or an adult, I think if you have wonderful, good things happening around you, you need to be able to release that and share it. It can cause a problem, of course. I had in the primary school, I had an amazing leadership team. There were six of them, and four of them got promotion at the same time at Christmas, which was amazing for them, amazing for the school, you know, to have these people moving on to promotion. But of course, it meant I was devastated. I'd lost all my leaders, and we had to start again. But for me, I think education is all about learning what's going on around you and developing it and developing the people that are around you. And it's also all about the children. For me, it's all about John in year four. I always think about year four because as a head, you'll know that year four is where not much happens in terms of transition or preparing for SATs or... So if as a head, you know your year four is having a really good experience, then the rest of the school is fine. And it's something that I used to ask governors as well. When I, you know, left and became chair of a variety of boards, at the end of the meeting, to just say to them, thank you very much for your time. How have we helped John in year four today? Because sometimes I think we just forget about the children. And as I've got older, and actually since retiring, it's become a greater cause for me. What about the children? So yes, I've been really lucky to be in the right place at the right time, knowing the right people. And it's just been great fun.
Julia, it's just listening to you is so nourishing and it brings hope, but also shares the realities. And the fact that you've been able to grow into a leader, but also grow leaders that they have been able to sort of spread their wings and share really good practice and heart is magic. But that transition to governance, was that quite tricky? Because where you're ahead and you know the operations, you understand the strategy, you understand what, you know, the John in year four is doing perhaps. How did that differ when you became chair of a governing board?
When I retired, I always intended to be a governor. Because as a head, I knew what difference an effective, efficient, supportive governing body would make to me and to the school. And during my time, I had some amazing chairs and I had some dreadful chairs. So that was going to be my, you know, my go-to job when I retired. I was going to become a governor. And I didn't think it was going to be a problem. My first role was in a colleague, a friend's school. She was the head and she needed extra governors. So I didn't see it as a problem. But the rest of the governors were a little in awe, I think, because I'd been a head. And then that awe-ness, I don't know if that's actually a word, but that being in awe then moved to, well, Julia can do it because Julia knows all the answers. And they didn't get it. They didn't get the idea. So it did become another one of my campaigns to actually get governance good, to get people who understood what governance was all about, and for people to be valued by staff and school leaders, and for them to understand that it was about John in year four. It always came back to the children. And I was very lucky in the authority I was working in. They moved me. If you saw the list of boards that I'd been a member of, you'd think, goodness, we're not going to have her. She doesn't stay very long. But the idea was that I would go where there was a particular project. So perhaps the it was a new head and they weren't really sure how to sort out and how to deal, build a relationship with their board. Or possibly it was a new chair who really was feeling out of their depth, or there was a particular project that the school was facing. So it meant that for me as a learner, I went to a lot of different boards, a lot of different schools. I was on the board of a nursery. That was something completely different. And I've also been right the way through on the board of a secondary school. I've been part of a Monty Academy Trust. I've been chair of a small MAT, and they are all different. But there is always that golden thread of what can we do to support a school to make it even better for the children. And I think sometimes there is this confusion about what the word support means. The tagline was also always to be a critical friend. And quite often the board would be divided. Half of them would be critical, half of them would be friend, and not actually realise what critical friend means. I think critical friend is quite unhelpful because it's easy. It divides people quite easily there. And you don't want to be friends. You don't want to dislike people, but friends have a different relationship than people on a governing board. So it is about, again, using that potential that you see in front of you within governors, and seeing that actually, yes, they really get it. They could go on and be chair. And also to see the potential. I was lucky because I wore those two hats of governance and headship. And I was able to support head teachers in a way that quite often governors wouldn't. And the heads would possibly use me in a way that they wouldn't normally have done for a chair. I think it also, I had the advantage of my age to a certain extent, because there were times when I was able to slap legs. I could actually say, no, that's not good enough. And they were able to take it from me, partly because of my age, you know, well, grandma does that, as well as my experience from both. But I was able to learn a lot about headship as a governor. And part of me, there have been times in the past when I thought, I'd quite like to be a head again, now I know what you're supposed to do. I'd quite like to be ahead again now I know how to build those networks and how to actually get people to utilize their skills. That's probably just in a flight of fancy. I probably wouldn't want a headship, so you know, don't offer me one. But it's really interesting how much more I've learned about headship since I retired. I can remember on my retirement day, as we walked out the door, my husband came and collected me. And as we walked out the door, I said to him, well, they'll find out how rubbish I was now. You know, I've been saying this for years. But as we came out and got in the car, I said, they'll know how rubbish I was, because they'll be able to see all the papers. So right up to that time, I still didn't believe that I was, you know, doing a good job, or that I, you know, I should have been where I was. That may be because of the way I became a head, you know, after two terms, after the summer term, suddenly being thrown into headship. But I knew when it was confirmed that the head teacher wasn't coming back from his holiday, I wanted that job. I wanted the opportunity of running the school. It took 18 months for him to finally go. But, you know, I did know that that was what I wanted. But I just worried. And all the time, you know, they'll find out. They'll find out. And I'm not the only one that thinks like that. The imposter syndrome is rife in education, I think, but particularly in leadership. Because we take that mantle of assuming we should know everything.
Head teachers have their own journey, and that, you know, the imposter syndrome and not feeling as though you're good enough at points, and always second guessing and questioning and trying to people please, and all of those things that you try to do, a governor realizes, you know, the journey that a head teacher goes on. And is there to support them as needed.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think the best boards are those that value and appreciate each other, use each other's skills, and have that humanity about them. That when you go to a governor's meeting with the leadership team, we all start off, the thing we all share is that we are all human beings, and we've all had, we might have had a very bad day coming into that meeting, we might have had the best day of our lives, we all have lots and lots of things going on, and we just need to start off by, you know, right, so let's just breathe. And off we go, and not be critical. That's why critical friend, I think, is really bad. It's about asking the right questions. And as a head, I wanted people to ask the right questions. I can remember when we opened the primary school, I had a really lovely group of governors that had come from both the junior and the infants. And they were really keen to, you know, do their very best. And it became very clear to me on the second governor's meeting that they were going to be, they'd started off as nodding dogs. You know, I'd come with a reputation because I'd been the junior head, so they all knew me. And now we've got this amazing primary school, and Julia was still there, so that was fine. So they just needed to nod. And I didn't want that. I was a new head. I was a primary. I was a new head. You know, even though I'd been doing it for 12 years, I'd never been a primary head before. You know, I had little buttons that I could almost tread on in the nursery. I needed support. I needed help. But bless them, they just nodded. So the third meeting, it was probably about the third one, my head's report, I wrote it with two glaring mistakes in it. And I'd given it out to them, and I very quickly, in my leadership journey in education, if I produced a paper and you had it to read beforehand, I wasn't going to go through it. And I've always done that. You've had my paper. Are there any questions? And so and that's what I always did with my head's report. You've had a chance to read my head's report. Are there any questions? And they all sat there and said, oh, thank you very much, you know, nodding dogs again. And I then pointed out the two mistakes, and you could see that they were absolutely horrified. They'd either been caught out that they hadn't read it, or they'd been caught out that they didn't understand it, or there was clearly a question there that needed to be asked. And they never not read it again, which is really good.
That's quite bold, Julia. That's very bold.
as a new head.
Well, I was a new head, but I wasn't, you know. And that's the, you know, that's about, as a head, you have to understand that you do need to not train your governors to be nodding dogs, but actually help them into their role. And governors have to help heads into their role. And each board is different. You've got a complete, you know, I went, you know, I sat on all of these boards. I still had my head teacher hat on, but I, as a head, I would have approached them all very differently. And that was, you know, really, really important that you understand that the mix is different and you have to adapt accordingly. But yes, they always read the report.
Thank you, Julia, for that. We are going to nicely now into our break, and we'll catch everyone later for some more interesting conversations. Thank you.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health.
But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff
mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
The BBC reported on a long-term study by the Institute of Fiscal Studies, which found children living near Sure Start centres did better at GCSE. The research says these living near a centre performed up to 3 grades better than those living further away. Sure Start began in 1998 to support new parents, especially in disadvantaged areas, but due to austerity, many have since closed. The Department for Education said its Family Hub scheme had a number of advantages over the Sure Start model. The IFS study used postcodes from when children were age 5 to determine proximity to centres and looked at the GCSE results of those children 11 years later. It found what it describes as big improvements in performance in those living near a centre, especially those from low-income backgrounds. Former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, Labour Chancellor at the time the initiative was launched, said the UK now needs a new Sure Start, and described the results as what most parents already know, that a supportive environment in early years was life-transforming. Among all children in the study, those who live near a Sure Start centre performed better than those who lived far away, but the trend was most pronounced amongst those eligible for free school meals and those from minority ethnic backgrounds. According to The Guardian, schools in England could lose up to £1 billion in funding by 2030, with exceptional falls in pupil numbers prompting closures. Mergers and school closures are already happening in parts of London, where pupil numbers have been falling for some time. According to the think tank Education Policy Institute, the North East is projected to see the greatest decline in primary pupil numbers, down by 13% by 2028 to 29. At secondary school level, Yorkshire and Humber, the North East and London are projected to have the largest falls in pupil numbers, although other areas, including the West Midlands and the South East, have rising numbers. Pupil numbers had grown because of a fertility surge in the 2000s, but as that cohort has moved through, numbers are now falling. Even with increases in per pupil funding, the EPI predicts schools will find it hard to balance budgets as fewer pupils do not lead to reduced costs. The decline is due mainly to a falling birth rate and changing migration patterns. Full details of the EPI projections can be found on the Guardian website. Schools Week reports on the decision by Ofsted to appoint a former chief inspector, Dame Christine Gilbert, to lead the independent inquiry into its response to the death of Ruth Perry. Dame Christine served as the HMCI from 2006 to 2011 and now chairs the Education Endowment Foundation. The Learning Review follows a coroner's ruling in December that an Ofsted inspection contributed to the death of Mrs. Perry, then head teacher of Caversham Primary School. The review will consider actions Ofsted took in response to hearing about the death of Ruth Perry. Dame Christine will have access to relevant records, Ofsted staff, and the opportunity to meet with Ruth Perry's family as part of the review. The review will not examine the November 2022 inspection of Caversham Primary. Teaching unions have expressed concern about the appointment of Gilbert, saying it was critical that the review was robust, independent, and impartial, and that some would, rightly, question the notion of a former HMCI reviewing the work of Ofsted. A report will be completed after the review and recommendations will focus on future actions. Schools Week also reports on a plan for the Department for Education to work with the Scout Association to provide 40,000 explorers, those aged 14 to 18, with the skills and knowledge they need to consider a career in teaching. The DfE will work with the Scouts to create age-appropriate activities that inspire young people to consider a career in teaching, linking to relevant badges and awards. It did, however, clarify that there are currently no plans for a teaching badge. The policy is part of the DfE's Get Into Teaching plan, which aims to elevate the status of the profession and target new audiences who have not yet considered teaching as a career. The scheme will launch in September and it is hoped that it will reach 40,000 young people. The Scouts will create support and guidance material for those running the programme. The initial one-year contract is worth £43,000 but can be extended subject to budget availability. Finally, a teenager who campaigned for skateboarding to be included in school qualifications is proud to see it added to the list of approved GCSE sports in Wales. According to the report on the BBC News website, Qualifications Wales has added 13 new sports to the approved list for GCSE PE. Other newly allowed sports include BMX, shooting, kickboxing and wakeboarding. The new Made for Wales GCSE in Physical Education and Health will be available for first teaching from September 2026. The change makes Wales the second UK nation to include skateboarding, behind Northern Ireland. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support headteachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict and finding solutions.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome back to Julia. We've been having some bold conversations around governance, so we'll just carry on, really. So, Julia, can you give us an example of a specific challenge or difficulty that presented itself whilst you were governor?
Oh, goodness. Crikey, where do I start? I think some of the difficult there's a difficulty that stretches across a number of boards with a number of head teachers, and the difficulty stems from a misalignment of an understanding of roles and responsibilities. Governors think that they are there to do all the work and they are there to make all the decisions. Head teachers think that they need to make all the decisions and just tell the governors. So I think it is about establishing those roles and responsibilities. And that can take a while, particularly as a chair. It can take a while and needs actually training for the board, but also training with the senior leadership team. Having separate training is better than no training, but if you can get both at the same time, and if you can get a facilitator that explains, neither of you is in charge, you are all in charge, approach, that can really help. I can't think of a specific, to be honest, but that thread quite often went through, so that you could end up with a head teacher that just said, this is what you're going to do, treating the board almost like mushrooms, keeping them in the dark. Or you could have a governing board that had no respect for the head, who just saw their role to be critical, to constantly ask those ridiculous questions, which quite often showed that they hadn't read the information. So I think for me that was and is the basic difficulty that governance has, a misunderstanding of its role from both parts.
I think that's really critical. And I think when, you know, during my time in headship and as a senior leader, I was either really afraid of the governor because I thought, oh God, they're coming in for a visit. Everything needs to be looking really good and we've got to present in a way. Or I wasn't sure whether they, quite rightly so, like you've just said, understood education. I think it really, there needs to be a discussion around who is on the board and why they are on the board. So we sort of understand that the role of a parent governor, for example, and we sort of have that perspective and we know how to have those conversations, because we understand their role as a parent if their young person is in that school, for example. However, there are other parts of the body where you just think, I'm not sure how this has come about, or especially if you're inheriting a governing body. And so my question then is, how can we ensure that leaders are mindful about who and why they have members on that board and what they're actually doing?
Yeah, it's key, and it's something that I learned being a governor rather than being a head. And it goes back to the children. It goes back to the needs of the school. So boards, and I was guilty of this as a chair, right, okay, we've got 10 governors and we need a link governor in English, maths, science, history, geography, PSHE. We have to have all of these link roles. And in small schools, that can cause a problem with a board that's only small. And of course, within the staff, you get staff that have all of those links as well. But as for thinking about the governors, you set up all of these links. And then you look at the school development plan. Say, for instance, you're the link governor for history. You set up, look at the school improvement plan, and history doesn't feature. Mm. And yet you're the link governor for history, and you want to do a really good job. So you're going to take up some of your time. You're going to take up some of the staff's time looking at history. But history actually at the moment is on the back burner. So when it comes to link roles, And that is where you think about the skills of the board. Let's assume that the board has already, you haven't got any vacancies, you've just got the people that you've got. Rather than having a list of subjects and dishing them out, I think it is a much better way of looking at the school improvement plan, having a look at the priorities and thinking, right, okay, we've got three priorities this year. We're going to look at writing, we're going to look at our environment, we're going to look at, what else could it be, the well-being agenda. So you've got three main priorities. Just divide those up amongst your governors. So, for instance, a ridiculous example, you've got a school improvement plan and you've got circus skills on the school improvement plan. Head's been on a course, thinks circus skills are amazing, can benefit the children in all sorts of ways. So you have a link governor for circus skills and they work really well. Next year, circus skills isn't a priority. It may still be being done in the school, but it isn't a priority. So you don't need a link governor for circus skills. So it's about the children and what they need, i.e. their curriculum, driving the labels that everybody has. And that's the same as a head. Do you need somebody who is a subject leader for history if you're not going to be focusing on history, if it's only going to be part of another package? I mean, I know we have the confusion with Ofsted, but we're not mentioning Ofsted at the moment. But as far as governors are concerned, you then focus the board on, right, these are the areas we want you to be informed about, because these are the areas we want you to ask us those challenging questions about. And these are the three things. That's where our head's going to be, on those three things. We're not going to be talking about history. So if you're the link governor for history, you know, we know it's lovely that you are so passionate, but actually we haven't got time for you. We want to look at these three priorities. And in a way, it's turning it completely on its head. It's looking at the needs of the school, which should be the needs of the children and the quality of the teaching and learning that the children are having, and why you've selected those priorities. And that is where the board actually focuses. So it would mean that the head's report, for instance, wouldn't be, you know, I don't know, 7 pages long. It would be, you know, your front sheet would have your basic information that you have to do every time, you know, attendance, you know, all of that sort of thing, just that tally of data that governors like. But then the rest of it would be a section on each of those priorities, and the governors would understand more about what they're reading, and it would actually have more meaning to them, so that, unlike in my example where, you know, they clearly hadn't read it, they are engaged with it because they've only got three things to focus on. If you're appointing governors, it has changed. Once upon a time, you know, governors were like the village of Vicar of Dibley Parish Council. You just need bums on seats. You need people to turn up at the fete. If they make cakes, then even better, they can come along. Governance is not like that now. Governance is really important to the success of a school. So when you're looking at getting people on your board, you need to be very much more circumspect about what you're looking for. So again, you go back to the school priority, you go back to that vision of your school, you go back to what it is you want to achieve as a school community, and you then start looking at people with either the skills within those or with the passion. You don't have to have a skill, you don't have to have a degree in something, you can be passionate about it. But I think also, so that would be one of the starting points. But I think also for head teachers or senior leaders who are trying to appoint governors, you need to be honest. You know, it isn't attending six meetings a year. It is possibly attending six meetings a year, but it's also setting aside at least an hour before each of those meetings in being able to read the papers. Sometimes you're going to need to do some research. Sometimes those papers may actually lead you to need to do more reading. So when you're interviewing people, it's really important that you say to them, this is the equivalent of a part-time job, you just don't get paid. Now, that will probably mean that of the 10 that have shown some interest, you probably only pick up a couple. But that's far more important than having a board of people who just turn up for the biscuits six times a year. It is about letting them realise, I think it sort of goes back to something I said earlier, it's about them realising just how important their role is. It is vital that they do their role properly. It is going to make a huge difference to the school. So as a head, as a leader, as a chair of governors, it's really important that you are picky with the people you choose. You need those people who have got the commitment of time, but also understanding. You know, headspace is something we never talk about. And school leaders are terrible, terrible at getting headspace for themselves. They just assume, well, it's okay, I'll think about that later, or I'll give myself some time to sit back and reflect. We as educators, we're not very good at reflecting. You know, we do something, there's a bit of a problem, we solve that problem. We never sit back and say, right, well, how did we do that? How did we actually get through that? We never give ourselves the reflection time because there's always something else that we feel we need to do. We need to put reflection into that timetable so that we actually learn, so that next time we can get there that much quicker. So when you're a governor, you need to understand that you do need some headspace. You are going to be sent some papers. They are, you know, if the head's report is put together in a way that we've just described, then it is going to be good reading. It is going to change each time because the school year will be focusing on different things. Head's report should never all look the same. Because if you're a governor, you're a new governor, you read the first one, really exciting, really engaging. You read the second one, probably about the same. By the time you get the third one, you sort of think, well, what's the point? I've already read all of this. It's just the figures at the top here that are different. So, and the work of the school is different in October to in May to June. So the head's report should reflect that difference. Rather than having this, you know, concrete format all the time. But it is about being brave when you're selecting governors, both as a leader and as a chair, and, you know, sending that message that this is the equivalent of a full part-time job, but you just don't get paid, but you get huge, huge payment in other ways.
It's so interesting that you mentioned around manoeuvring the roles or the responsibilities a governor has based around those school priorities. I mean, there are some roles which will remain. For example, you would always need a safeguarding link governor, yeah. Always. And you may always need a send governor, depending on the type of school. So, but then again, the others could be tweaked slightly to what is priority at that time. So if we're taking that into consideration, what type of training do you think it's essential for the governing board to have? It needs to be obviously done in an equitable manner as possible, because yeah. You don't want someone to take on that role and then one year they're leading on a specific priority, and then the following year they're leading on another priority, and then the following year they're leading on another priority, they're the link governor for another priority. So. Yeah.
I think it needs to be ideally having two ideally having three, but certainly two governors following the same area. If you're reducing the link, the link roles that governors are going to have to three, then you can double up and possibly triple up so that everybody gets the opportunity of that in-depth learning. The next area is to put those, I did talk about training for leaders and governors together. I developed a workshop for governors for link roles. And as I was putting it together, and actually after the first time I'd run it, I realised that it would be much better if subject leaders could have come along as well. Because it's really important that the subject leader knows their role. And I'm thinking about Ofsted as it is now, the idea of a deep dive. Our subject leaders now need to be able to articulate their curriculum in about 10 minutes. And so the ideal would be for those subject leaders to do those presentations to the governors so that they not only, they practice that presentation, but so that the subject leader is really clear what their subject is trying to do. And doing it in 10 minutes means that, you know, we all know that we could talk for England, but being able to articulate your curriculum in about 10 minutes is ideal. So you've set up, you've got your subject leader, you've got your two or three governors, and when they come in, they don't just sit there and the subject leader then spends most of the morning telling them what they're doing. The governors come in, and because they're already engaged in what the priorities are, what that, you know, you've got the one priority and then it's being broken down, they are then able to ask those questions, much as Ofsted would. They're obviously not going to be making judgments, but they're not just going along to be given information, which is what used to happen with link governors. And I can remember, you know, when, you know, as Kripke said, governors are coming in, you know, we need to clear the decks, we need to, and the person who the link governor was coming to see, they think, oh, well, that's going to be a complete waste of time, I'm going to have to just spend all of this time talking to them, taking them all around the school. No, that is, you know, that is not how it should be. It should be an hour maximum, really, but, you know, let's be generous and, you know, we'll all want a cup of tea and a biscuit. And so 2 hours of that person's time where there is a conversation, where governors come already with information. They know what the school is doing. They don't need the subject leader to sit and tell them that, well, I'm trying to do this and this and this. They already know that because it's come from the school improvement plan. And they can then ask those questions. That will then give the subject leader that confidence that they are being asked questions that they know the answer to. You know, spending a morning explaining what you do doesn't build any confidence because the person you're talking to is just going to sit and they're going to nod. It's about building confidence of that subject leader in preparation for things like Ofsted. And then they can, having had that time together in school, then for me, the ideal is that that subject leader or that project leader comes to the full governors and gives them that 10-minute presentation, just as they would to Ofsted. They will then have at least three governors who will be able to ask those searching questions, those in-depth questions, so that it all has a purpose. Governance previously didn't have a purpose at all. You know, they were something back, I can't remember, it was the Victorians or somebody said you had to have a school board. But there needs to be a purpose now. Governors are too busy. They've got lives. They need to know that if they're going to give up 2 hours going to school to talk to somebody about the wellbeing project that the school's doing, that it is going to be more valuable than them just having a nice time.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if that actually covers it.
I think it does beautifully, and I think it comes back again to that, that you brought it in really nicely around that idea of purpose. And I think sometimes we can get caught up in traditional roles or traditional ways things need to be, and actually that's that we need to be done with that and be okay with doing that, and actually making that time really purposeful, really clear, but also at that point then bringing the critical element. So this is where we're at, this is the data that we have, what's your thoughts, what more, yeah. What else? And actually that being the heart of the conversation. And it's okay if the practitioners don't have the answer at that point, but that's the starting point for them to then move forward. But they also know that they have the support of the governor to say, actually, have you looked at this, or have you thought about that? Because like I said, not always governors are not always from an educational background. Oh. And so therefore that's that diverse way of thinking or working. They could be from a project management background, they could be from a structural background, or whatever it may be. So is harnessing their skills and thinking, right, how can I use that to build the next part for our young people better or differently? And so it allows us to see things from a different perspective, and it enables growth and curiosity is what I'm feeling and hearing from the dialogue so far on both parts.
Yes.
I think the other part really interesting is when it does come to Ofsted, I've been in situations where Ofsted have made the call, and you almost have to go through the whole process and even remind governors of what the ethos and the vision and the values are. So they are Ofsted ready. So is that something that you think should be part of the training, or do you think that should be grown organically if that's if governance is being done well, i.e. through your example of
things? Yes, I think we shouldn't be doing anything for Ofsted. Having said that, that's the game we're in. You know, you have to play the game by the rules that are set. But for me, as a head teacher, I knew that if Ofsted were, you know, the reports were good, that I was doing a reasonable job. So it's not doing things for Ofsted per se, but just knowing that that external judgment is saying, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. And I think it does need to come organically. Governors can get themselves in as much of a fix as staff can about Ofsted. But it's really important now. I mean, my first Ofsted inspection, I had a year's notice. And my report from them was about 40 pages long. And I had 6 inspectors for a whole week. I was only a junior school. I was 3-4 junior school. So it was, and now for something completely different, they are there for such a short time. And obviously for my first experience, you know, governors were popping in and out all the time. They knew the team, they were able to, and the inspectors were able to talk to them as and when. Now, you've got a day and a half, and you want your governors to be there to be able to give you that support. But, you know, what if you have a board where everybody works full time? Which is why the idea of having a duo or a trio of link, you know, following particular link, also having that presentation to the board, so that all the governors have all the information, which comes back to the equity that Nazia mentioned, because the board is as successful as its weakest link. You know, the chair shouldn't, just like the head, the chair shouldn't have all the information. The chair shouldn't, it shouldn't be assumed that the chair knows everything. The chair's just there to keep everybody else in order, really. So it's about sharing that information, sharing that knowledge. So if you do it as part of every day, it doesn't become this big thing for governors either. And they are able to talk to inspectors in a very relaxed way, because this is what we always do. This is the information I know. I didn't have to sit up till 3 o'clock this morning going through all the minutes of the previous meetings. And so it, you know, unfortunately, as I say, Ofsted is something that we've all had to take on board. It's that accountability. And I think it's really important for governors not to take on that accountability in the same way as governors. Some boards do. They assume that, well, you know, Ofsted are going to be coming. We need to get them ready. We need to challenge them. We need to, you know, well, but they don't. They don't. It's not accountability in that way. It's about asking those questions. You're right about, you know, having people on your board who come from industry, who do things differently, who have a different mindset, for a subject leader to actually say, what do you think? Is there a better way for me to organise this? You know, how would you do it? And I know there's a huge laughter, you know, well, we'd have got it done by now, you know, in business, or, you know, we'd have thrown it all out and started again. It is about using those skills. I mean, I can remember when I first became a chair, thinking I need to have somebody that's finance, that does finance. As a head and as a chair, I didn't do finance. I proudly say I don't do finance. You know, it was my job to spend it. It was somebody else's job to stop me. And I used to worry, you know, I need somebody on the board with finance. But then I realised that apart from going to finance meetings, did I actually use that person's skills? If they knew finance, then they would have a completely different way of thinking than I would. Did I ever ask them that? Or did I just restrict them to that one little box of finance? So it is about looking at the skills that the school needs. And sometimes if a school is in dire straits as far as finance is concerned, you do need, you know, almost a forensic accountant, somebody who can actually be very creative with money. But they will have other skills as well. And it's about making sure that when you appoint somebody, you know what those skills are, and you've already got an idea of how you're going to use them. Because if you join a board and you're very passionate about being a governor and you want to do the best, the worst possible thing is for never to have a job, for nobody to ever ask you to do something, or nobody to ever ask you, what do you think? You know, it is, you know, complete, it's demoralising. So
there's a lot of schools which are quite big, and as a result of that, they might have quite an extensive governing board, and therefore they're able to have those committees because they've got the number of people to form them. What about smaller schools that just don't have the capacity within the governing board to do that?
Yeah, you normally have one link governor per subject, and rather than looking at those responsibilities in that way, look at your priorities, which are likely to be two or three, and then put two or three governors onto that area. You would still have your full governing board, you're likely to still have a finance committee, and you may well have standards committee. But that's all. My idea is that it's the knowledge, it's the sharing of the knowledge that can come from that subject leader working with governors. Such a lot of time is wasted with committees where everything is repeated. You go to a committee, the committee does all that work, and then it's repeated at full governors. You know, it is about looking at the best way to utilise the time of those volunteers for the benefit of the school. So I wasn't thinking about committees. I was thinking about link governors, but rather than just being a link governor, you'd have two or even three governors looking at that same subject area or that same project.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because I've never come across that way, that structure before. It's always been one link governor, so you've always just got one main point of contact as a subject lead or something. So that's quite an interesting way of putting it. So it's kind of like it's not a committee, like formalized as a committee, but it's not a singular person anyway, so that there's kind of like shared responsibility.
Yes, it is the sharedness. Because as that individual, going back to Ofsted, if the deep dive happens to be on your subject and you're not available, will there be anybody else from the governing board who will be able to go along and not make a pig's ear of it? So it is about that sharing. It is about the board understanding that everybody is equal, everybody is important. And to give that subject leader, you know, they, if, you know, they could end up seeing the same person every year, you know, and what have they got to talk about? Very little. But when you've got a group, you know, a pair or even a trio, the trios are wonderful, you know, and then the four of them, you know, the governors and the subject leader, can spend some real quality time. And if the subject leader is able to ask those governors, what do you think? What do you think about all of this? You'll have somebody in there that says, oh, I think that's marvellous. But you'll also have somebody within that three who will say, yeah, that's quite interesting. Have you thought about? And then there may be someone who just doesn't understand it at all, will then ask those potentially inane questions, but questions that actually give them that additional knowledge that they need to then be able to offer that constructive comment rather than criticism. Constructive comment, I think, is much better.
So, Julia, we're coming to the end of our show now. And are there any top tips that you would give either to schools when recruiting for governing boards or to governors themselves?
I think my top tip would be to be honest for both. To be honest from the school about what they want, what they need, the time that actually is going to be needed. And I think also from a governor's point of view, you also need to be honest. You might be able to attend six meetings a year, but you might not have time to do anything else. However, you may be someone that travels the country on a train regularly, so you would have that headspace. So I think being honest about what the role actually entails is key for both sides. And I think also appreciating the skills that everybody brings to the table, and that your starting point that you all share is Johnny here for.
Oh, that's so brilliant. And I love the clarity and how succinct you pulled that all together. So the show has had lots around your own experiences, the challenges and how difficult it has been, but also how vulnerable you've been and how you shared your journey really candidly. And I think that's, there's so much value in that. And then you've done a full circle and actually asked the same of those that are entering into leadership and recruiting for the governors and vice versa. And I think that shows such authenticity and shows such creativity in being able to do something and everything with purpose and not just be those nodding dogs, as you've mentioned before. Julia, it has been an absolute pleasure having you with us today, talking us through governance. No doubt we'll probably need to call you back in at some point to give us some more top tips and to share some more stories. But thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. It's been great fun to catch up with you both.
Take good care, Julia. Stay well.
Thank you.
Well, that was a really interesting conversation, I think.
Really interesting. Really interesting. I quite liked, or sort of an area that I'm thinking about since you know, listening to Julia speak, is the sincerity around having a governing board and the relationship that should be, and to break those sort of expectations, I think is absolutely crucial in having valuable conversations. And, you know, as she mentioned, Johnny, in year four, to be able to do that, you need to feel safe. You need to feel like you have got people on your side that will support you. And when there is that time for challenge,
that happens in the right forum, in the right way, respectfully. And I think sometimes it can sometimes get a bit blurred. I think having a whole process around why people have chosen to become governors and what they will bring to the table, because it's about that nourishment. It's about bringing other perspectives and different ways of doing things and having purpose for every meeting and having direction for every time, and it not just being a tick box we're coming to check, because actually sometimes that may feel like the standard narrative perhaps. So I think sincerity is something that I think I'll take away from this conversation. What was your thoughts, Nazia?
I think that she mentioned some really key principles of governance practices. One of them was about everyone being on the same page. I think that is really important, because when it comes to those critical moments when you need those governors, whether it's for inspection, verification visits, whether it's to really get some honest feedback and information and support from the governors, it's important that all the governors are on the same page so that you can get the right advice and guidance for the school based on the context, based on the situation, and based on that very clear vision for those students within that community and the staff within that community and the vision of that organisation, the academy, the school, whatever it may be. And the other bit I think really stood out was about having a really strong governance team who are aware of their roles and responsibilities. And I think that what happens a lot of the times is that people fall into these roles, and if there's a little bit of unsurety of maybe I need to check everything, and it becomes tick boxy, like you said, or maybe I need to just, you know, hold back a bit. So there's that little bit of unsurety there. So I think having a really strong induction into the governance team once you join it, and then having clarity around those roles and responsibilities, I think will help. And I think another key learning element which stood out for me was around the school governance structure and the adaptability. It doesn't need to be so firm.
I agree. Absolutely.
That adaptability, creative. Be creative, that flexibility, adapt to the context, adapt to the changing cohort of needs of that community, adapt to the changing school priorities.
I think what you've done there is quite interesting, because you talk about the induction, but I think within the induction, the alignment of the team, as you would with your middle leaders or your senior leaders, needs to go up the other way. Mm. And that training, the alignment around that, so that the agility can come through because relationships are strong. Relationships remain meaningful, direction remains clear. That's a really nice summary of what you shared so far. Did you have any other final thoughts before we round off?
No, that's the last of it.
Super. It has been incredible. Julia is a powerhouse with a wealth of information around governance. We will be back same time next month with another powerhouse of a speaker who will be joining us and talking about all things fantastic. We won't share what that will be just yet, because we like surprises. So have a lovely weekend ahead and take good care.
See you soon, friends.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.